Hello and welcome to News 24 on Air, our live audio service. I'm Ihlali Ntsabo. On Saturday, Iran launched an unprecedented drone and missile attack on Israel, 2 weeks after an Israeli suspected attack on Iran's consulate in Syria killed over a dozen people, including Iran's military commander. The five-hour attack was the first ever direct attack by Iran on Israel from Iranian territory. According to media reports, Iran launched more than 300 missiles and drones at Israel. Joining us now on the line is News 24's foreign editor, Philip DeWitt, to give us a full update on the attack. Philip, thank you so much for joining us. So on Saturday, Iran launches an attack on Israel. But do we know what was the cause of the attack and if Israel was in any way anticipating the attack?
Look, Iran was very clear that it sought revenge for the attack on 1 April on its embassy in Damascus. And let's be clear about this, Israel has not taken responsibility for that attack, but it's an open secret that this was an Israeli attack that killed about a dozen people in a embassy compound. So it represented a rather serious breach of international norms and laws. And from the beginning, politically, we knew that Iran had to respond to that, that they could not simply let that pass. So it's been about a bit over 2 weeks since then. And this then was the attack that Iran put together. So it was fully anticipated for a significant amount of time. There, analysts were suggesting to us that Iran's revenge would most likely come by way of an attack on an Israeli embassy elsewhere in the world, so that it might happen in South America or somewhere in Africa, that it would be a tit-for-tat attack on an embassy, that it would not be what was this, which was, you know, we've never seen this before, an attack from Iranian soil directly on Israel. Of course, it was seen to be coming. And intelligence had been mounting in the last couple of days. So as we were approaching the weekend, we knew that this attack was likely. Iran now says that it gave prior notice, quite a lot of prior notice, to surrounding countries, as well as the USA. The US denies that. And, you know, one of the reasons we kind of believe that denial is because US President Joe Biden was actually off on a weekend retreat and he had to hurry back to the White House, which is not a good look. The US would avoid that had they known it coming. So the argument is that Iran is pretending that it gave prior notice in order to cover for the fact that it's attack was so comprehensively intercepted. But in terms of broad strokes, absolutely, this was not the scale and the scope of it and the fact that it came directly from Iranian territory. That was a surprise. The attack itself, not a surprise at all.
Right. And Philip, just briefly paint a picture for us about, you know, the relations between Israel and Iran just prior to these two attacks.
Not great, in a phrase. Look, Israel and Iran, you can trace back the current fighting back to about, call it 1979, to the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And ever since then, so shortly after that resolution, Iran started to support Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah remains a major proxy for Iran, and Hezbollah has been in conflict with Israel pretty much ever since then. And it has come and gone. So we've never seen kind of open, direct conflict between the two. But we've seen all these kind of attacks. We had the 1990s attacks in Buenos Aires, where the Israeli embassy and later an association, a Jewish association, were attacked. And those bombings were ascribed to Iran. We have no reason to believe that that wasn't Iran. It really came to a head in 2006 with the Lebanon War, where you had Israel directly fighting Hezbollah, Hezbollah being very heavily supported and armed by Iran. So that's pretty much as close as we came. But then you've also, so during the 2010s, we had this more kind of Cold War situation where there were a lot of, as Iran was trying to develop nuclear attacks, a number of nuclear scientists in Iran were killed by car bombs, and Israel never acknowledged that it was their doing, but Mossad was highly suspected in that. There were landmark cyber attacks, which appear to have been Israeli originated. attacking. And so that was attacks to stop the development of nuclear wars. And then in the 2012, we had attacks on Israeli diplomats in different parts of the world. So it's been this constant series, you know, of attacks on one another. And everyone has been wondering at what point that might lead to open war.
Right. And of course, recently, Iran had been quite critical and vocal about Israel's attack on Palestine.
And yet, strangely, has not launched direct attacks, or even Hezbollah has not launched major attacks. And a lot of analysts have been somewhat surprised by the relative restraint that Iran was showing. Mm. Keep in mind, the Iranian government is also facing a lot of pushback locally. They have domestic troubles, much like Benjamin Netanyahu does in Israel. So it would have been not that unexpected if Iran had made more of the opportunity that Gaza presented. Military analysts told us this. You had Israel focusing its military forces on Gaza, and it was very much distracted. That would have allowed a easier time for Hezbollah had it attacked with more force. Instead, it has kept up the kind of rocket attacks that we've seen before. So Iran appeared to be relatively restrained. Then came this attack. So it was, you know, Israel crossed the line in terms of the attack in Damascus. And now, of course, we wait to see what the Israeli response will be, what the kind of Israeli domestic politics means, what the U.S. pushing back against escalation means, and then where Israel takes this next.
Right. Philip, now let's circle back to Saturday's attack. Of course, I mean, various media houses have reported that, you know, over 300 missiles and drones were targeted at Israel. But do we know which cities in Israel were targeted by these missiles and drones?
We have some idea. A lot of them were intercepted early on in their flight path. So a lot of them were intercepted before they crossed into Israeli space. So it's hard to tell exactly what the targets were. And of course, it's hard to believe, for instance, Iran, when it says what the targets were. All of the parties here have reason to withhold information from us and perhaps even to feed us misinformation. What we do know for a fact is that it appears the Nevatim Air Force Base in the Negev Desert in southern Israel was one of the major targets. That's about halfway between the Dead Sea and Gaza, if you want to imagine a map of Israel. Mm. And this is a base where F-35 planes are based. Mm. Iran told us specifically that it had targeted the F-35s, which they believe were involved in the embassy bombing in Damascus. So they said, look, we wanted to directly retaliate for the embassy bombing, so we went after these planes. We know that there were some successful missiles that did hit at the Nevatim Air Force Base, and that was also close by was where the only casualty was. So there was a 7-year-old girl who was hit by shrapnel as a flying projectile was intercepted overhead.
Right.
And that's kind of on the route to this Air Force Base. That was not the only target. There was at least one radar installation in northern Israel on the other side of Jerusalem that was also targeted. And we think that there might have been more broad targets. But of course, critically, this was not targeted at population centers. This was not targeted at cities. This was very much targeted at what we would consider conventional military targets.
Right. So do we at this then point know if there were reports of any casualties and or severe damages?
Damages are not quite clear. Israel says that it was quite minor damages. We don't have independent confirmation of exactly how bad that was. Mm. There was one girl who was injured in Arad. Appears to be the only casualty from the attack, which, I mean, is quite extraordinary. So you had a very large massed attack, and it does appear that there were no serious. I mean, as you're shooting down the drones and missiles overhead, there is, of course, a risk. So it seems nearly miraculous that not more people weren't injured. But it's now the dust has settled, and it doesn't appear that there were injuries that we weren't aware of.
Right. And Philip, what's the situation like now on the ground?
Very tense and waiting. Mm. The United States has made it publicly clear. Surprisingly, they went public with this. clear that they're pressuring Israel to not escalate the matter further. We know that the Israeli war cabinet met and that the Israeli government wants to respond, but is divided on the scale and the timing of that response. You know, so you've got the usual hawks versus doves debate going on there. Iran has reopened its airports today. Jordanian airspace is open again, you know, so the region is settling down into kind of tense normality. But all eyes are on Israel. Iran has made it very clear in believable fashion that it will take no further action. So the ball is now in Israel's court. The nature of Israel's response now will determine, you know, possibly where the Middle East goes for the next decade or so. So very closely watched, and a lot of very nervous people in that region.
And I do find it quite interesting that, you know, the US's reaction to this is quite embroiled at the center. But Philip, just perhaps also paint for us an overview, an overview perception of how the international world has been reacting to Saturday's attack.
Very quickly and with calls for calm almost universally. So keep in mind that it took several hours for these drones to make it from Iran to Israel. And Iran actually announced the attack while that was happening. So literally while these drones were still in the air, we saw world leaders in kind of the relevant time zones start to issue statements saying, let's have calm, please, let's not have escalation, you know, calling for as much calm as you can have under the circumstances. And that's continued through into today. So we've seen that from China and Russia, and we've seen that from South American countries, and we've seen it from, you know, the G7. We saw it at the United Nations and in the Security Council, where everyone is basically trying to prevent this from becoming an all-out war. And the US, which is such a key player in this, and, you know, no friends to Iran by any stretch of the imagination, coming out and publicly saying, we are putting pressure on Israel. We don't want to go to war with Iran. We don't want this to be a direct confrontation of that nature.
Right, Philip. And just to close off on the point of perhaps, you know, this conflict possibly escalating to something greater, how can we anticipate that, or is it too difficult to say at this point?
I don't think anyone can really anticipate. There's so many things going on right at the moment. And, you know, late on Saturday night and early on Sunday morning, a few key individuals made a few key decisions that made for the world that we woke up to this morning. So, for instance, if Iran had targeted population centers, if Iran had not issued a statement saying this will be the only wave of attacks, maybe then the US and Israel would have felt that they had to launch strikes on Iranian territory to prevent further attacks, and we would have been in a very different world today. So again, now we've got a few key leaders within the Israeli establishment who hold peace or war within their hands, and we just don't know what they're going to do. You know, there are a lot of different pressures on them from their allies, from their constituents, you know, in terms of the kind of political future that they face. So a lot of people are very worried. Many people are working behind the scenes to kind of keep a diplomatic lid on things, but I'm not seeing very confident predictions on what happens next.
Philip DeWitt, News24's foreign editor. For more on the story, do visit news24.com. That's all we have for now. Until next time, I'm Mihlali Ntsabo.